I tried to do it on my iPad and couldn't do it.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Sorry about that delay. All right. We are. Hello, Joyce. Okay, there we go. Calgary's on the
Hey.
phone. Hello, Barbara.
Hi. Was Vivian on the share this morning?
Yes. Yes.
Hi, Rotate.
She's doing okay?
Yeah. Zichen is quiet. Vivian was on the call, so was Penina.
Uh-huh.
So there.
Okay.
Beth and Zichen, both they said quiet. I think Jan Edelman was also on the call. She lives out in the Tel Aviv area. Telmond, I think, is what it's called. So yeah, I mean, quite one part of the country doesn't necessarily mean it's quiet everywhere. That's for sure. But anyway, continue to daven, and we'll see what every day brings, a different permutation of events. So we'll see what happens. But welcome, everybody. Yeah. Welcome back. And it's good to see everybody, even if certainly if you have your camera on, I can see you, and if you don't, then I see your name, so I appreciate you being here. Couple of things as before we start. Actually, you should have a recording in progress indicator, and you should have, if my screen is bigger than everybody else's, you can go back to gallery view and change that. So that's that you need to do at your end. Do you see everybody? And the only other thing I'm going to do temporarily is yeah, that's fine. It's mute. Now, one observation before we jump in and start, and I probably should have said this last week, but I didn't, so I'll say it tonight. And we are continuing our discussion of Perek Yud Zayin, which is the rebellion of Avshalom and the council of Achitophel, the council of Hushai, and all the machinations and deliberations that are taking place. I want to put a caveat out there in the public domain before I start. If I could have picked a different subject to talk about right now, I think I would have, because it's too easy to jump from one subject to current events, especially this subject. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that other than to daven for the safety of the hostages and the safety of all our chayalim and people of Israel. But beyond that, I don't want to draw connections. We're going to be talking about strategy and tactics of war. We're going to be talking about council and advising council and politics in war. We're going to be talking about all these subjects that are too close to home for current comfort level. It just happens to be that's where we're up to. But to draw parallels and connections between what we're learning and current events, as tempting as it may be, is actually not a good idea for several reasons. Number one, I am not a expert in any of these subjects from a real world experience. I'm certainly not going to speak to tactics of war, number one. And number two, because the circumstances of biblical politics and biblical warfare and the circumstances that we are discussing is so worlds apart from the world in which we live in today, that you know, what was the old expression when they wanted to, when there was a fiction and you want to put a disclaimer on any resemblance to real characters, real or otherwise, is totally coincidental. It's not quite coincidental, but I am putting out a disclaimer that to avoid the temptation to draw analogies and comparisons between the subject that we're learning and contemporary issues right now as they are unfolding in Israel in real time. I just want to make that that clear. So I put that out there, and for what it's worth, and somebody has a different opinion, they're welcome to share it. But that is where my headspace is at. I was going through it, and I kept trying to jump. And I said, no, that's a dangerous thing to do. Don't do that. So I'm just putting that out there. Okay, we are ready to start with that introduction. That's kind of like the most dramatic introduction I've ever given to a shiur. So, you know, it's like totally shma, but and halacha lo lamaaseh, right? This is not, all right, let's jump in. Enough talk. We are here, Perek Yud Zayin of Shmuel Bet. And one of the, we started last week with the discussion of the, Avshalom is sitting now in Yerushalayim, he's sitting in the palace, he's almost practically, he is, for all intents and purposes, sitting on the throne. David is on the run, he's now in, left Yerushalayim literally that day. David's heading south, or actually east, into Midbar Yehuda, and Avshalom comes up from the south, from Hebron to Yerushalayim. There is this moment of the council of Achitophel in the last chapter about the Pilagshim, which I'm not going to rehash. And now we had this moment which Achitophel turns to Avshalom and he says to him that we need to address the rebellion as it's unfolding. In his case, it's the opposite rebellion, right? Avshalom is now on the throne and David's army or band of men who went with him are the sort of the rebels. So Achitophel makes the suggestion that he's going to take a small army of men, and I will chase after David, David Alayla. I will catch up to him. He's tired. He's weary. He's hiding in the, he's from both the run and the war. And I will frighten his people. Everybody with him will run. And I will take out the king alone. And then I'll bring everybody else back to you. Now that is the basic plan of Achitophel, a strategic, quick moment attack using a small fighting force of 12,000 soldiers, hand-picked, Evchera. Achitophel will lead them, and they will go and take out in a strategic targeted attack. They will take out the leader of the rebellion, namely David, and everybody else will come back home. And that is what we refer to as Etzat Achitophel, the counsel or the advice of Achitophel. Avshalom hears it, and he says, Avshalom, he sounds pleased with it. And then he says, but wait a second, something about it doesn't fit. I'm not 100% comfortable. Let's hear what Hushai has to say. And let's hear what Hushai has to say. And we spent most of the shiur last week kind of reviewing the suggestions of Hushai and his response to Achitophel's counsel, specifically addressing some of the concerns that we had suggested were the reasons why Avshalom was somewhat hesitant about Achitophel's counsel. We had pointed to two. We'll talk a little bit more about where that goes moving forward. But we had focused primarily on two aspects of Achitophel's counsel that Avshalom seems to be bothered by. And we see that by Hushai's response. One is that he places himself at the center of the conversation. He's constantly referring to what he would do as the general, meaning, let me take 12,000 men, I will go and pursue David, etc. Which from a strategic, from a tactical perspective, makes sense. You don't want to take, strategically as well, you don't want to take the king and put him into the center of the battle because the king is the king, right? You need him. So you're going after David and his men, so you take the general. In this case, that would be Achitophel, and let him run the campaign against David and leave Avshalom in the palace in a place where he is safe. That would be the objective argument in favor of Achitofel. Nonetheless, Avshalom is a little bit nervous about allowing Achitofel, giving, empowering Achitofel in this fashion, partially because Avshalom has just come to Yerushalayim. He's just, right? He doesn't yet have the depth, legitimacy, and the support to hand over that kind of victory to Achitofel. I am reminded of another situation similar that comes to mind, which was when Shaul was had brought in the young David into his inner circle as a great warrior, and Shaul would go out to battle, and he would bring David along with him as his nosei kelav, as his second, if you will. When he came back from battle, the women who would sing songs of victory, what did they sing? Saul smote thousands and David tens of thousands. Meaning, what set off Shaul's paranoia about David was specifically his sense of jealousy, if you will, or concern that David was more a greater warrior than he, and kind of didn't sit well. So there's a certain insecurity there when you empower a warrior or a general or somebody like Achitofel to go and achieve the great victory of against David, and Avshalom is somewhat uncomfortable with that. I think he's also it's too close to home. Viketi et hamelech levado, to smite the king. There's a certain reference there to David as Melech, which may be also bothersome to Avshalom. Either way, Hushai, I think, senses that. Hushai's response is he's trying to thwart Avshalom and thwart Achitofel and thwart Achitofel's suggestions. So Vayomer Hushai, he says, this is not Lotova Itzashi at Achitofel Bapamazot. In this particular case, it's not such a good idea. Hushai says, you know your father, and his people, they're warriors, Mari Nefesh, they're embittered souls, the Kedov Shakul, they're like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field, and your father is a man of war, he's not going to sleep in the middle of the road, in the middle of the camp with his soldiers so that you can just pounce on him and attack. He's going to be hiding. He's going to be hiding in a pit or in some place that you're not going to find him so easily. And if you have it, Achitofel attack first, if he falls first, then everybody else will be disheartened. And then even if he is a ben chayel, who become ben chayel, even the staunchest warrior, valiant warrior whose heart is like the heart of a lion will melt when Achitofel is defeated before David. Your father is a warrior. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows that he is a man of, that he is a ben chayel. And therefore, my suggestion is the exact opposite. Ki atzdi yasof yasof alecha kol Yisrael. Go and gather all of Israel, the entire army, midan v'abesheva, everybody from north to south. Kechol asher asvat hayam, like the sand of the sea. Ufanech ochim bakrab, and you yourself lead them into battle. And we shall come upon that place where you shall be found. Uvanu elecha b'chad l'mekomot asher nimtza sham. And we will we will encamp against him, and we will defeat him. And like dew upon the ground, not one will be left. And if he defends himself by drawing himself into a city, because right now he's out on the fields in the midbar, and if he hides behind the walls of a city, then we have ways of defeating walled cities. We can, ropes to the city will draw the city walls, will literally drag the city walls into the nachal. City walls aren't going to stop us. That's Hushai's counsel. ויאמר אבשלום בכל איש ישראל, טובה עצת חושי הקים, יצאת אחיתופל. אבשלום and איש ישראל, the men of Israel, they sided, they said, okay, טובה עצת חושי. Hushai's counsel sounds reasonable. And that's more or less where we left off, was to understand the contrast that, and the challenge that Avshalom is facing at this moment, where on the one hand, he has the counsel of Hushai, and on the other hand, he has the counsel of Achitophel, and he has to make a decision which is better, which is tactically, strategically, effectively going to give him the victory that he needs in order to secure the Malchus. And so the text tells us, Avshalom and all of Ish Yisrael, they sided with Hushai, and they preferred Hushai's counsel over Achitophel's. And then there's this side line, which is the last pasuk we read last week, V'Hashem tziva lafer tatzat Achitophel atova, levavo avi Hashem al Avshalom atara'a. There was a kind of divine hand in that decision, because really, objectively, Achitophel's counsel was preferable. Achitophel's counsel was Eitzat Tovah, was good counsel, and God wanted Avshalom and the people to prefer the counsel of Hushai, because that would lead to a better outcome for David. And that's more or less where we left off. Yes? Ready with me? Okay. So there's a couple of items that I wanted to follow up on that we haven't quite finished. One was what it is about, sort of to continue the conversation about Hushai's counsel and how it is that Hushai manages to convince Avshalom and the people that his counsel is better than Achitophel's. Objectively, I'd have to say, if I stopped sharing the text, and if we were to just look at this objectively, and I said, okay, here are your two options. Option number one, you have David, and he has 600 men with him, 400 men with him, who are part of his inner circle army, and you have maybe a couple of 600 families that came with him from Gat, with the Itagiti, and they and their families, and you have a couple of others, and then you have the army of Avshalom, which is now comprised mainly of the army of Israel, if you will, Ish Yisrael. You have two options. You take 12,000 men of trained strategic soldiers who are trained in warfare, who are chosen for the task of Charash, Nemesar, Elvish, and you take them on a surprise attack in the middle of the night so that you can take out the leader of the rebellion, take out David, and the rest of the army will fall. Or you spend a couple of weeks, you gather the entire army together, you march on David's army, and you confront him army to army, and you have an all-out attack and an all-out war that will probably cost tens of thousands of lives. In the end, it probably takes out probably something like 30 or 40,000 lives are the cost at the end of the battle as we see it unfolding. If you were to be sitting there trying to figure out which of those two options were your better choice, I think it's a pretty easy choice to make. I think that there's a lot of logic. I mean, correct me if you speak up if you think differently, but I think it's a pretty clear strategic advantage to take advantage of the element of surprise, a small attack force. David is on the run. He's already tired and weary. We saw that at the end of Perek Tetzayin. Everything speaks to the brilliance, if you will, of Achitophel's plan. And if it fails, okay, so you always have a fallback of an all-out assault if you want, but nonetheless, you have the advantage of Achitophel, who's a trained general, and a choice of 12,000 and 12,000 of his best fighters. So you're looking at two very different models of how to put down the quote-unquote rebellion, if you can even call it a rebellion, because David is retreating. David is on the run from Hushai and Achitophel it's unclear why and how they are swayed to the position of Hushai. It seems that Achitophel's counsel is so much more sound, if you will, or reasonable. I think that that's a fair assessment. Speak up if you disagree, but that's the my gut intuitively is that that is the sound, and that's how the text seems to conclude. Right, that it was by design because ultimately Achitophel's counsel was Etzat Achitophel Hatova, was the better of the counsel. So there's a number of elements here that we need to see in terms of how it is that Hushai manages to pull that or sway that decision in favor of what I think is probably, he knows, is the lesser desirable and maybe even less successful of the two plans. You lose the element of surprise, you allow David to gain his garner his supporters, you allow David to escape your grasp, right? All of the pieces of the puzzle. Why would the Hushai's plan, why would Avshalom be swayed to Hushai's side of the equation? So I want to point out a couple of things. Actually, this is the source page that I sent out by email this morning. And I wanted us to look at some of the language in this text. So in this chart, you have on the right side, you have on the right side column, you have quotes from Hushai's description of his counsel, his plan. And on the left side, I pulled a couple of quotes from other places in the story of David. And the basic idea is that from at least the language that Hushai uses, you get a sense that he's playing with memories. He's pulling into the conversation not just the strategy and the tactics of what's the better out right now, what's the better plan of action, but also he's playing to the emotion of recognizing that we're dealing with a people, certainly Avshalom, certainly is in his council, certainly the people who are clearly aware of who and what David is. And so, for example, you have phrases, I'll come back to the first line and the second, you have phrases like, Ataya data tavicha vet anashav ki giborim, v'yavicha ish milchama. And you know that your father is a man of war, your father is, your people, the people who are with your father are people of who are warriors, giborim, and your father is an ish milchama. That's not just a description of David as a force to contend with. It's actually a phrase that has been applied to David from the moment we first saw David as a young boy. Back in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tet Zayin, when Shaul was looking for somebody to play music for him so it kind of lift his spirits, and somebody counseled him and said to Mayan Echad Mehanearim, I know Yishai of Bethlehem has a son. Yodan, again, he certainly knows how to play the harp. But more importantly, Gibor Chayil v'ish milchama unavondava. He's a warrior. He's a man of he's a man of valor. He's wise and he's handsome and he's tall and he's a shemimo and God is with him and he's successful and he is a. And he's a musician to be on top of everything else. So Shilchai Lai David. So he calls for David to join his campaign. So from the moment we are introduced to David in the very beginning, David's description is, right, we're so used to saying David Malach Yisrael, Chai V'Kayam. Right? They used to say David Ish Milchama, David Gibor Yisrael, Gibor Chayel, Ish Milchama. That's how he was known. That was his reputation. And so Hushai plays on that language several places in the text where he refers to David as and his men as giborim and as ish mechama. Pasukhet atayadat tavicha vet anashim ki giborim ema and vavicha ish mechama, and he says it again later on that ki gibor avicha uvnei chayel asherito. That's exactly what he's referring to. So that's one aspect of it. There's another language here, and I don't know if we picked it up when we read it the first time, but there's another phrase that he uses that also resonates with Shaul, with Avshalom, and resonates with the people in a way that is not rational, it's emotional. And that's my point, is that I think Hushai is trying to pull at the emotion of the moment. When he says to Avshalom, Ataya data tevicha, I'm going to go back to the text for a second. Parak, pasuk chet and pasuk yud. Vayomach Hushai, Ataya data tevicha vet anashim kibu'im hema. You know your father and his men. They are warriors. Umare nafesh hema. They are embittered. We'll talk about that phrase in a second. Kidov shakul basadeh. That is an odd metaphor. Right? Bear robbed of her cubs in the field. It's just an odd metaphor to use for David. So you can talk about David robbed of the malchus, maybe. Maybe Avshalom is the cub that was robbed in the field. What does Dov shakul basadeh have to do with David? It's an odd metaphor to use, but he uses it. By and of itself, I'm not sure what to do with that, except that suddenly in Pasuk Yud, he uses another metaphor. Vehu gam ben chayel ashelibo kelev ha'ariyei mes yimas. Be the greatest, most valiant warrior with the heart of a lion in defeat. If Achitophel is defeated in his first battle, that heart will melt. The heart of a lion and the anger of a bear. The heart of a lion and the anger of a bear, two separate metaphors and two separate descriptions in the same speech. And if you're thinking, if you're sitting and listening to Hushai's words, the association is too good to pass over, which is that the very first time we meet David in person, we encounter a conversation between David and Shaul HaMelech. The context was the great battle with Goliath, and the Plishtim on one side of the river, on one side of the camp, the army of Israel on the other. Everybody's afraid; nobody wants to engage. And David approaches Shaul, and he says to Shaul, "I'm ready. I can take down Goliath." And Shaul looks at this little kid, this little pipsqueak, and he says to him, "You're a short little guy." Shaul is the towering giant. Remember, Shaul was chosen because he was tall. Shaul was chosen because his was his job to defeat the great giant of the Plishtim, namely Goliath. Shaul was mishichmo v'mala gavoh mikol adam. Right, was tall. David wasn't tall. He was gingy. He was redhead. He was lots of things. He was energetic. He was musical. He was a warrior. Wasn't tall. So vayomer David al Shaul. So David says to him, not to worry. I'm going to tell you a story. He's also a storyteller. He says, I'll tell you a story. I was once a shepherd for my father's flock. And the lion and the bear came and attacked my flock. And they took a flock from a sheep from my aid. Oh. I ran after that dove or that bear or that ari. Vikiti, vitzalti mipiv, and I smote them and I saved the sheep. Vayakom alai, and they attacked me. Vichzakti bizkano, vikiti, vimitiv, the lion or the bear. I took it by the maw and I ripped him apart, smote him, killed him, done. If I can take down a lion and a bear, I can take down this Philistine. No problem. Right? That was David's description of his prowess as a warrior. Don't mistake his capability. So that also becomes legend. Right? The legends of David's warrior status capability from the time he took down the lion and the bear almost became an idiomatic expression. Suddenly Hushai turns to Avshalom and he says, don't underestimate your father. He's like a bear. He's like a lion. And there's an association there that plays into that emotional moment. The last one is the Mari Nefesh. The people who are with him. It's not just David. It's also his band of warriors who are with him, who are described here as Mari Nefesh, bitter. That, too, is part of the story of David, because when he was running from Shaul and he was trying to escape Shaul's paranoia and Shaul's accusations, and Shaul tried to kill him, and he finally ran into exile. And at that time, he went and he hid in a place called Marat Adullam, and there he gathered around him a group of people. It was the first time David had assumed any kind of leadership. It was the beginning of his position as a king or as a leader. He gathered around him every person who had trouble, who had a debtor on their tail, v'chol ish mar nefesh, and all of those who were bitter. And David became their leader. Initially 400, later 600. And this was the initial group of warriors that were loyal to David. And they describe it as Mari Nefesh. So from every vantage point, Hushai plays on the language of this count of the story of David, almost the legends of David, to paint a picture that says, do you really think that in one night your Achitophel can take 12,000 men and defeat the great warrior, David, the Gibor, the Ish Mechama, with all of these descriptions? And now he starts to play on the emotions of the language that is that is part of the legend of David. Okay, so we have two options. You are now the council of Shalom. You now have to advise of Shalom which of these two pieces of counsel, which of these two plans you want to put into action. You are Avshalom's cabinet. How do you advise Avshalom? Achitophel versus Hushai. You vote. You vote. How would you vote? Achitophel's plan, Hushai's plan. You've seen the language, you've seen the text, you've seen the options, they're on the table, you're the cabinet, you are the Ziknei Yisrael, you advise Avshalom. How do you advise him?
I would vote for Hushai.
Because?
Because he's touched all the bases.
Okay. Anybody else? He touched all the emotional nerves. Okay, so he got to your emotions. Okay.
I think I go with Hushai also.
Because... He got to your emotions too.
What?
He got to your emotions too.
No. I think to use a slang, I think he's too full of himself. I agree that.
Hushai?
No, that Achitophel is too full of himself.
You're too nervous about Achitophel's self.
I'm nervous about him. I'm nervous about him taking his troops in and storming in and messing it all up.
Okay. All right. Hushai did a good job. Okay. Anybody else?
We spoke about this last week, very briefly. And If you don't know David's status, we know David's status because of the psukim before that he's tired and all these men are tired. But if you do not know that, and you expected a fight in Jerusalem and there is no fight in Jerusalem, you think that maybe David is laying a trap. Avshalom just marches into Jerusalem. There's nobody there. He expected, David and a big army. David is not there. David escaped. And you wonder whether he's laying a trap.
Okay.
So, waiting and building up an army is quite reasonable to full frontal assault. However, maybe Achitophel, whatever is there, I don't pronounce his name, maybe he knew something that we don't, but Avshalom comes in and he doesn't see anybody. It's a little scary.
I hear.
To know what's waiting
on the other
outside Jerusalem.
I hear. Okay. Any other views? Any other suggestions? All right. Council is voted. Everybody else is abstained. All right. So let's see what happens. It's interesting, you know, if I were to give Hushai one vote and Achitofel one vote, and I were to put it on the table, we all seem to, at least the voices expressed here seem to be biased towards the opinion of Hushai. The text seems to present a different story. Yomer Avshalom, Chol Ish Yisrael Tavat, Etzat Hushai Ha'aki, Avshalom and the Ish Yisrael all sided with Hushai Ha'aki over Achitofel. That's, I would say, you all agree with Ish Yisrael. But I wonder if you notice that there's not two groups here. It's not Avshalom, Achitofel on the one side and Hushai on the other. Yes, and now Avshalom is deliberating. But Avshalom has two groups to consult with. Who agrees to Hushai? All of you, and Kol Ish Yisrael. But there was another group earlier, right? There was another group earlier, back in Pasuk Dalet. Vayishar Devar b'nei Avshalom by Achitofel uve'nei kol Ziknei Yisrael. Who are the Ziknei Yisrael and who is the Ish Yisrael? Avshalom seems to have two different groups to which he is seeking counsel. There are the elders, and there is the Yomar Avshalom, V'chol Ish Yisrael. There is the Ish Yisrael. What's the difference? So take a look at on the source page. If you take a look at the Rabag is one of the few Rishonim I saw that makes this distinction, and he says V'yomar Avshalom V'chol Ish Yisrael Zemore Ki Ziknei Yisrael. The Ziknei Yisrael were not outsmarted by Hushai. They were not swayed by Hushai's emotional draw into the larger than life aura of David. They understood what was going on. Achitofel understood what was going on. They sided with Achitofel. And the fact is that even God says in Pasuk Yudalid that God swayed the decision in light of or in preference to the position of Hushai away from Atzat Achitofel Hatova. The better counsel, really, objectively, was that of Achitofel. And I'm not going to get into the tactics of it. I have no way of assessing that. But at least from a text perspective, one is an emotional appeal, and the other was a very strategic, tactical description of assessment of the situation. And I have the difference between the Ziknei Yisrael, the elders, and Ish Yisrael. Ish Yisrael is a much more generic, almost like the difference between the inner circle elders who counsel the king and the open up the window and hear what the street is saying. Right? The Ish Yisrael, the people of Israel, they're saying, let's take the entire army and go and call everybody up. And Ziknei Yisrael saying, you know what? Let's do this strategically, quick, small, get it done and move on. Solidify your position. And you know, that's a fascinating distinction. The question now becomes, what's the role of Avshalom in balancing these two views? Right? Avshalom is the king, ostensibly. Right? If he wants to be the king, he has essentially two different councils to consider. On the one hand, the one favored by Ziknei Yisrael and the one favored by Ish Yisrael. The job of Avshalom, therefore, is to decide and to weigh that decision in favor of what is smarter in this circumstance. Now, Avshalom is not the only king in Tanakh to be presented with two conflicting councils, one by, let's call it an older generation, one called by a more populous generation, and to side with the wrong side. Okay, he's not the first. He's not the only, I would say. He is the first, but he's not the only. The other example of this that comes to mind is the story of Rechavam. Rechavam is in Malachim Aleph Perak Yud Bet. So we're now jumping forward in time to Shlomo's son. So we're talking about David's grandson, Rechavam ben Shlomo ben David. When the kingdom was threatened with the split in the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, Yeravam ben Nevat is from Shevet Ephraim. He's in exile because Shlomo HaMelech's oppression of the people, and so he ran and Vayeshu b'Mitzrayim. And when he heard that Shlomo had died and now Rechavam had become king, he comes back from exile. And he approaches Rechavam and he makes the following request. He spoke to Rechavam saying, your father, Shlomo, he made our yoke very heavy. So we're asking you now to lighten the yoke of your father, because remember, Shlomo had this enormous construction operation. It was supposed to be just for the temple, which was 20 years in the making, and then he kept them going to build all these warehouses and storehouses and cities, and they virtually enslaved the entire people. Referred to in Sefer Malachim as Sevel Beit Yosef, the oppression of the house of Yosef. So he says, if you lighten that oppression, we'll be loyal to you, we'll serve you. So Rechavam says, give me 3 days. Let me consult. So first he consults with the elders, all the elders who served his father. And he says to them, how would you counsel? What would you say? What would you suggest I reply? And they said, if you will be a servant to them today, they will be your loyal servants forever. Meaning, if you acquiesce now and show them a little bit of kindness and a little bit of compassion and a little bit of mercy, you will acquire their loyalty forever. Fine, I hear you. He turned aside. And he went to his contemporaries, the children who he grew up with. And he asked their opinion. And he says, what would you say? What did they say? So the young men who had grown up with him said, this is what you shall say. Your father made a yoke heaven, and you should make it light for us. My finger is thicker than my father's loins. Meaning, you think you had it bad under my father? Wait till you see what I have in store for you. My father burdened you with a heavy yoke. And I'll make it even harder for you. My father chastised you with whips. I will chastise you with scorpions. You dare come to me with that kind of arrogance? That was the counsel of his contemporaries. So you have two choices. You can listen to the elders and acquiesce, or you can listen to your contemporaries and be the tyrant that they anticipate you are going to be. Your call. What do you think Rechavam did? So then he brought him back 3 days later, and he says to them, and he spoke to them in exactly, he quoted verbatim the counsel of his contemporaries, and he did not listen to them. There too, there was a divine need for that response, because it played into the nevuah of Achiah Shalini to split the kingdom. I suspect had he acquiesce to this elders, then we would have found a way to avoid the split of the kingdom that cost us so dearly for all the rest of biblical history. Avshalom is faced with exactly the same dilemma. He has the Ziknei Yisrael on the one side, with all their experience and all their insight and understanding of the circumstances, etc., led by Achitophel, who was, remember what Achitophel's counsel was worth in those days. Achitophel himself is described at the end of the previous perek, last pasuk, as Atzat Achitophel Asher Yatz Baimim Mehem Kasher Yishal Ish B'Dvar Elokim. Achitophel's counsel was considered like the word of God. He was so admired, so revered. And he has the masses open the window and listen to Ish Yisrael, and you're going to hear they're clamoring for war. You're the king. Which do you acquiesce to? And so it turns out that they said, Pasuk, where were we? Yudalad? Ayomer Avshalom v'chol Ish Yisrael tava atzat chushai ha'arki me'atzat Achitophel. And history could have been different. For David, it was a tragic end. It was a tragic decision because in the end, it cost the lives of tens of thousands of people. Could there have been a different end to the story? Sure, there could have been. But in the meantime, Avshalom's arrogance, Avshalom's emotions, Avshalom swayed by the people, however you want to describe it. But in this particular case, he listened to the counsel of Hushai Ha'arki. However, the story is not finished. It could easily have, just to understand how easily it could have gone the other way, right? This is a critical moment, and how easy it could have gone the other way. I want to read the next part of the story, and we'll come back to this Pasuk Yudalet in a second. But to understand what's going on here, we need to have a little bit more information. So follow me. We're just going to read through the next couple of psukim. Really, we're going to study them in depth at a later stage, but I just want to see how the rest of the story unfolds. Okay, you all still with me? We're good? All right. Pasuk Tetvav. So this is just after this moment where Avshalom Ish Yisrael, the text says in Pasuk Yudalet, Avshalom sides with Hushai Ha'arki. You understand, Hushai's primary agenda here was not to win the war against David. I think that's a foregone conclusion, correct? Hushai's primary goal here is to?
To warn David.
He doesn't need to warn David if he's not going to go to fight with David, right? And his primary goal here is to buy time, right? To delay, to allow David time to escape, to spoil the counsel of Achitophel. The counsel of Achitophel was built upon the element of surprise. He's now down in Midbar Yehuda. Get him now while he's still on the run, and finish it before it starts. Hushai's entire plan hinges on the element of time. Slow it down, stop the march, and allow David to escape. I think that's Hushai's understanding. And we find the following story. Vayomer Hushai el Tzadok ve'el Evyatar. Hushai then turned to Tzadok and Evyatar. Who are Tzadok and Evyatar? Hakohanim. Okay, Tzadok ve'Evyatar Hakohanim. Who are Tzadok and Evyatar Hakohanim? This is very important. Who are Tzadok and Evyatar Hakohanim?
Are those the two that David sent back to Yerushalayim?
Right. They are the Kohanim who carried the ark with David as he left Yerushalayim, and they said to David, David said to them, the ark stays in Yerushalayim, period. Yerushalayim remains the center of the capital of Israel and the Mikdash of Israel and the Mishkan and the Aron and all of that. We talked about that at length. But at the same time, when he sent back Tzadok and Evyatar, he said to them something else. He said, okay, you take the ark back to Yerushalayim, but also, what else did he say to them?
Be my ears.
More importantly, you have two sons. You each have a son. You are the Kohanim. You are stuck in the Mikdash. You are stuck in the Oel. You are stuck with the Mishkan. But your sons come and go. By going back to Yerushalayim together with the Ark, your sons, Achimatz and Yonatan, are in a position to be my ears. They can come and report to me. They can come and go. So he sent Tzadok and Yevyatar back, not only with the Ark, but also as a vehicle for communication. So Hushai, and he told this to Hushai. This is back in Perek Tetvav, I think, right? Let's go back. This is Perek Tetvav. Right, Tzadok came with all the Levim carrying the ark together with Yatar. So you have the Kohanim carrying the ark. Take the ark back to Yerushalayim. If that was that pasuk that I said is one of the most powerful pasukim in all of Sefer Shmuel, if God desires it, I will once again see His abode. When you go back to the palace, you take with you your two sons. I'll linger in the plains in the Midbar Yehudah, in the plains of the Midbar, until I hear from you. So they know that David is hiding out in Midbar in the Midbar, and your two sons will be able to carry a message to me. That was exactly what he had planned. So in our parak, let's go back to the story now. So Hushai says to Tzadok and Evyatar Konim, Kazot v'kazot ya'atz Achitofel Avshalom v'et Zikne Yisrael. This was the council of Achitofel to Avshalom and the elders of Israel. V'chazot v'chazot ya'atz Diani. And this was the council that I offered. Meaning, he shares with him the information that Achitofel said X, Y, and Z, Psukim Aleph through Dalet, and I counseled such, right? The other plans, so he has two plans, present it. Now go to send an urgent message to David. What's the urgent message? Don't spend the night in the plains of the wilderness, in the Midbar Yehuda. Don't stay the night. Pass over the Arden, get out. Pen yivulala melakulacha amashirito, lest the king be swallowed up and the people who are with them, and they are consumed by your presence, and they come and attack. I'm confused. We just said that Avshalom decided to follow the plan of Hushai. So what's Hushai afraid of? Well, it gets even better. V'Yonatan v'Achimatz umdim be'en rogel. Yonatan and Achimatz were not in Yerushalayim. They were outside of Yerushalayim, waiting in a place called En Rogel. V'Halacha Shivcha v'Gidlehem. There was a member of the help in the house, if you want to call it that, who went and told, right, the Kohanim sent their message to them. V'hem yolchu v'gidu l'melach David. And they would go and tell David, they could not be seen coming into the city, right? Yonatan and Achimatz couldn't be seen coming and going, consulting with Hushai. But nonetheless, a na'ar saw them, and he went and he told Avshalom. The two of them, Achimatz and Yonatan, went quickly. They came to a city called Bachurim, which is just north of Yerushalayim, and they were told that they're being chased. And there was a well in this courtyard. They went down into the well. And the woman went and covered the well with some kind of covering, and spread some sort of a grass on it, or something that would, or hay, something that would hide it from the people. Velona dat davar, so it was not known that they were hiding. Vayavo avde Avshalom el haisha. Avshalom's servants came to the house. Abayta biyamru ayeh achimatz Yonatan. They were looking for Achimatz and Yonatan. Where are they? They've gone past the brook of water. They're not here anymore. They've gone on. So they sought them, but they couldn't find them. They came back, and these Avdei Avshalom came back to Yerushalayim empty-handed. Very similar, by the way, to another biblical story that we are familiar with. Story of two people hiding, found out that they were spies. A woman saved their life by hiding them, and then distracted the guards by saying he went that way. No? Somebody tell me the story.
Yeshua sent two spies.
Two spies of Yeshua saved the Bai Rachava Zonah. She took them up to the rooftop. She hid them amongst the flax. When the guards came, she said, "Ah, they've gone on into the hills." They went looking for them, couldn't find them. 3 days later, she lets them down the window and out the door for them to, actually the same night, they left them out the window. They hid in the mountains for 3 days and then came back to Yeshua. So almost the same kind of story. We'll talk about the connection when we look at this parak in more detail. When they left, so these two people, Yonatan and Achimatz, came out of the well, and they went and reported to David. What did they report to David? Listen to their report. Quickly, pass over the water. The water referring to here is the Jordan River, meaning go to the other side. Get out of Midbar Yehuda. Don't stay here. Because that was the counsel of Achitophel to come and chase you now tonight and catch you while you're still here. And so they went and they rose up and passed over the Jordan, and by the morning dawn there was none of left on the west side, and the rest of the story will take place in Yar Ephraim. So it's a fascinating piece of the story, but I have a simple question. If Avshalom and Ish Yisrael had already decided in favor of the plan of Hushai Ha'arki, why does Hushai need, which is a long process of gathering the army together and could take weeks, it could take months, and then to engage with David in a full-scale battle, why does Hushai have to go and warn David? Why does he have to send risk the lives of Achimatz and Yonatan by sending him on a mission to go and tell David, Kazot v'kazot ya'atz Achitofel? And that's exactly what they report. The plan of Achitophel. I thought they would already accepted Kacha Ya'atz Alechem Achitophel, and therefore you need to get out of here because Achitophel is coming. I thought Achitophel's plan was rejected. You see the problem? So there's two possibilities. I prefer the second one. One possibility is that Hushai was afraid of Avshalom would change his mind. Okay. But that fear is only really a fear for 24 hours, because the whole idea of Achitophel's plan was that it would be put in place right there, right? Immediately, quickly. There's no time to deliberate for days on end over Avshalom. Right? They're hiding in the well for several days. Then they go find David. They have to go. Right? There's no time to deliberate in Achitophel's plan for several days. Right? This is a strike now, or you lose the opportunity. Hushai's agenda was to, in fact, encourage them to delay, deliberate, and lose that opportunity. That's exactly what Hushai wanted. So why does he have to go warn David to escape? So what possibility is that he, in fact, you never know, Avshalom might change his mind, which is possible. But there's another possibility, which is in Tanakh, we've seen this exercise before. Tanakh has a hard, because it's a linear text, it has a hard time describing events that are happening concurrently. Modern literature, even sort of other forms of media, have a easier way of describing events that are, has a language that can describe events that are happening simultaneously. Tanakh doesn't do that. What happens in Tanakh is that you get stories that are thematically connected to each other. So you finish story A, then you go back to story B, and you go to story C, and sometimes story B goes back in time and starts at an earlier point in time than story A. The classic example of this is the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Opening chapter of Sefer Bamidbar starts in the second month, which is the month of Iyar. And they take this big census of the camp of Israel. In chapter 11, we're going to learn about, or chapter 9, I think it is, going to learn about the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni. But the chapter begins with a description of the Korban Pesach on the first month. So I'll show you the text. Let's go back to Bamidbar. Okay, Perek Aleph. On the first of the second month, month of Iyar, in the second year. Then I jump to the mitzvah of, I think it's Perek Tet. Wait a second. Did we go back in time? To tell them that on the 14th of the month they have to make the Korban Pesach. Why didn't I do this story of the Korban Pesach in chapter 1 and then the census, which is in the second month in chapter 2? You follow? Right? They're out of order. So the answer is that the continuation of this story is the people who come to Moshe and say, we are Tamei Nefesh. We can't... There were some people who were tame. They couldn't make the Korban Pesach. They came to Moshe. They complained. And so Moshe introduced to them the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni. When is Pesach Sheni? On the 14th of the second month. So I have the first month. Then chapter one is the month, is the second month, year. Chapter 9 starts back a month in Nisan so that it can go forward into the story of Pesach Sheni. You follow? It's like going like this, but it is what it is, right? That's the challenge of text. Is I need to describe, I describe things thematically and not chronologically. Chazal referred to this as Ein Mukdamu Muchar BaTorah. There are many places where the order and the sequence of events are out of place because I need to finish one theme and then go back to something that had occurred in order to be able to move forward. So we have this impression that the council of Achitophel and the council of Hushai and the decision of Avshalom is what, a 5-minute process? Avshalom, Achitophel, what do you think? X, Y, Z, 4 psukim. Hushai, what do you think? 10 psukim. Okay, how long does it say to articulate 10 psukim? Avshalom deliberates, we decide Hushai's plan is going to get put into action, and we move forward. Then Hushai goes running to David and says, oh, Achitophel is bad news. But that's not the way things happen. So Hushai, so Avshalom is sitting there and he's not sure what to do. And so he deliberates and he says to Achitophel, what do you think I should do? And Achitophel says, what do you think he should do? And then he says, oh, Hushai, what do you think I should do? And Hushai says, suggests to him, and he analyzes it. And he says, well, this is what I think. And maybe, and there's a whole conversation. It took us, what, 10 minutes, 15 minutes to have that conversation. I'm sure with a council of advisors and the elders and the Zikne Yisrael and the Ish Yisrael and everybody else, this sitting there deliberating. How long is that deliberation going on? No idea. An hour, 2 hours, 3 hours? Somewhere along the line, somebody had a cup of coffee, needs a bathroom break. Right? You don't know where it's going to go. So in the meantime, in the midst of all of this deliberation, Hushai excuses himself for a moment, goes outside, grabs Tzadok and Avitar, and he says to him, go tell David to get out of here, because I don't know where this is going to go. In other words, the suggestion is that when Hushai told David to run, he didn't tell David to run because he was afraid, Avshalom was going to change his mind. He told David to run because he didn't know where this was going to end. Kazot v'kazot ya'atz Achitofel, kazot v'kazot ya'atz the ani. This was his suggestion. This was my suggestion. I have no idea where this is going to end. The best thing I can say to David is, don't stay in Avot Hamidbar. Don't stay where Achitophel thinks you are. Move the camp. And get as far away from Midbar Yehuda. Remember, Midbar Yehuda is David's backyard. David spent all the years he was running from Shaul, he spent in Midbar Yehuda, in the caves of Midbar Yehuda. That's exactly where Achitophel is going to go look for him. That's where they all expect him to be. So Hushai says, go somewhere he's not expecting you to be. Go into Yar Ephraim. Go hide in the jungles of the forest on the other side of the Yarden. And we'll talk about that jungle in a couple of chapters, right? Cross over the water. Race your tracks. Just leave, because I don't know where this is going to be. And that it's an insight, it's a reflection of how literally how dramatic and how up in the air everything is at this moment. This literally could have landed differently. And so Hushai's whole intent here is to buy some time and allow David to escape. But does he really anticipate that Avshalom is going to be swayed by his suggestion of waiting several months till you gather all the army together and go in an all-out assault against David? I don't think so. I think that he probably thinks that Avshalom is going to side with Achitophel. He's made a good case, but I don't necessarily think that he has an ironclad argument. And so he sends David across the Yarden. In the meantime, we're left with Vashem Tziva Lafer Tatzatatich Achitophel. There's another element in the story. And the other element in the story is that there's a divine orchestration going on. There's a divine hand here. And the divine hand is that Avshalom might have otherwise been swayed by Achitophel. Remember, he brought Achitophel into the rebellion. Achitophel is Bathsheba's grandfather. This is where it all started. Achitophel's counsel would have been devastating for David. Avshalom should have gone there. But there's an element of Yad Hashem in the story that we can't ignore. And that, I think, is also part of the equation. So dramatic a turnaround is the decision of Avshalom to side with Hushai. How do you think Achitophel took it? Right. This is Achitophel knows very well that if Hushai's plan is put into effect, this rebellion is doomed. And when, in fact, Avshalom takes the irrational decision to side with Hushai, what do you think, how is that going to play out for Achitophel? An insurrection, treason, sided with the enemy, sided with Avshalom, revolt, all-out war. How is that going to end with Achitophel? So unfortunately for Achitophel and for us in Tanakh, it's a very tragic ending. Because after Achitophel, David runs, crosses the Yarden, we're then told, go back in, right, after Pasuk Chapet, now we go back to the council. Now we go back into the council chamber, into the deliberation. Ve'achitofo ra'a, ki lo ne'esta atzato, and Achitofo saw that his counsel was thwarted. Ve'achavosh et hachamor, ve'yakam, ve'yelech el beito, el iro, he took his donkey, went home to his city, ve'yitzavet beito, put his house in order, ve'yechanak, and he hanged himself, hung himself. And he committed suicide. It's a very tragic story and a very tragic end to Achitofel. But again, to understand the stakes at which what was involved here and the dramatic moment for Avshalom and also for David that could have and in some ways would have ended differently. I would end here. Except I need one more postscript to the story. And the one more postscript to the story is to understand what it was that God did to sway Avshalom to the decision of Hushai and against Achitofel. You know what? I got a better idea. I'm going to leave that question as our question for next week. So remind me, because if I forget, I plan something else for next week, but I want to come back to this question. This question needs a larger address, which is, what does it mean when it says, V'Hashem tziva lafer tzatzat Achitofel atova? How does God play with people's decision-making process? Even kings, right? Lev melech b'yad Hashem. How does God... Was he playing with the heartstrings of Avshalom? Is he playing with Avshalom's decision-making process? Is he taking away Avshalom's free will? What is it about this moment that God kind of sways towards the decision of Hushai? How does that play out? And that's not just a question about Avshalom. That's really a question in the broader sense of moments in Tanakh. You have a very similar reference to that story that I showed you about Rechavam, when Rechavam sided with the youngsters instead of with the elders. That story also ends with V'lo Shema Melech Alam, the people, right? Ki Aita Siba Me'im Hashem, because God had wanted it to end that way. Or the classic example, of course, is Paro. Right? God will harden Paro's heart. And God will harden Paro's heart so that he won't let you go. What is God? How is God playing with the free will of key biblical personalities at critical moments? That's an enormous topic. There are moments when we see it. And in each time that we see it, I think that there is an approach that we need to understand. So I would, rather than doing it in 3 minutes, I'll leave that and we'll devote next week's shiur to that piece of the story. I will therefore stop here and take questions. Questions, comments, observations, critiques. Open mic, schmooze, say hello, whatever.
Rabbi, when you send out the notice and the Zoom link mm-hmm. for next week, mm-hmm. pose the question again to remind us.
I have to remind myself.
Okay. Well, this is a test.
There you go. Okay. I have to actually prepare. I had thought of doing something else, but this kind of, as I'm finishing it, realized that this is a much bigger conversation than to do justice in the just one text. So I will try to we'll try to pull that together for next week. Okay. Any other questions? No, and I will stop the recording.